Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
This is the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I gave it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful.
No yelling on the bus.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight familiar, your butt at the party.
And Jake Latondras.
I am bad news.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet this guy's into the woods $100.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, didn't say it.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line podcast. I'm Rocky LaFleur, sitting in the Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi. It is Thursday, so you know who's on the other end of the line. Double R to himself. Double R, are you ready to get home?
I sure am. Don't ask me why, but yeah, I'm ready to get home. And had a good time down here, though. It's just another day in paradise. We went shot a lot of pintail this morning, some redheads, and golly, what a spectacular trip. Talking everybody back home about the rain. I've forgotten all about rain. You know, I'm in basically a part of the world that gets 15 inches of precipitation a year. It's everywhere. All the plants have thorns on it and stuff, you know, until you get off of agriculture and around these bays. But yeah, it's just, I'm looking forward to getting home. I'm going to skip tomorrow afternoon's hunt and come on pack. So we got one more hunt. We're going to try for Brant in the morning. And, we've had some fair to middling success with them this year. But everybody in camp wants to go try them, so we're going to get off and go try them in the morning. And then it's a wrap. I'll be home, Rocky, almost 30 hours before the next trip. So I'm ready to get home for those 30 hours.
I know you hadn't had time to, you know, this is, before I get that, I know you hadn't had time to listen to the podcast with Bill Cooksey, this one that we recorded yesterday. I'll ask you something. For all these young people that are aspiring to hunt for a living, let's spend a couple of minutes on this. I don't think there's, besides Bill Cooksey himself that hired the best pro staff in the world, there's nobody else out there that can, you not only do you live it, you are around some of the biggest professional hunters out there. Get to hunt with them every day. And some people are made to do this. Some people think they're made to do this. But at the end of the day, it's hard on you. It's hard on the family. And it's just not a lot of money in it.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't think the hunting industry is the most profitable industry in the world to get into.
You know, Bill and I spent some time on it this yesterday talking about it, and it's just how it came up. One of my friends, somebody, you know, he had about 30 or 40 people come in his booth at the NWTF. Man, how do I get in the hunting industry? And the thing about it now, in the times that we're living in, unless you invent something that's industry changing, besides toting a video camera or becoming the next big influencer that's in front of a camera, it's a tough world to be in.
Mm-hmm. Getting tougher by the day. You know, Rocky, I never set out to say, I'm going to do this for a living. We talked about that in the past. This isn't what I've set out to do. It just happened. I found the quality of service just wasn't there under another model. And I know a lot of people on the internet, a lot of people, you know, I can just get on there and Google and find it myself. Well, good luck. Okay, I get it. Yeah, I mean, let me tell you what, the internet's full of folks. I did see something on social media today. It was an outfitter in Louisiana airing out. Airing out, like, I mean, unbelievable. Unbelievable airing out on some guy. The guy had recorded, and he had called. Matter of fact, they didn't kill a lot of birds. It was a tough season. But he called just to discuss a few things. You know, and I'm just talking about the 50% of the story, the half the story I heard, you know, which was this outfitter just profanely. I mean, my gosh, I'd never heard nothing like that. You know, there's good ones and there's bad ones like that on the internet that you find. You just go Google. You know, and so we got a really bad one right out the gate. I was a young man. I worked hard for my money. And wanted to go to Canada and shoot something, shoot a goose, shoot some geese. And we just got taken. I started doing my own due diligence and putting a Canadian trip together. And one thing led to the next, and the outfitter asked me to start bringing in clients. And you know, I didn't know nothing about nothing. I was a federal government forester. But one thing led to another. As we became immersed in the business, you know, there was just, to me, a huge disconnect, a huge different way in doing things. There was a way to do it better. And I do know, and I'm friends with some people that still do it part-time. And in my opinion, just for me and my wife, what we do requires full-time attention. Full-time attention.
Yeah, you and I were visiting about that.
You deserve my full-time attention, not my part-time attention. If somebody's got my part-time attention in a business that has so many moving pieces like this does, if it's got my part-time attention, It just something that the ball's going to drop, and I'm not as a service provider as dedicated and focused as I need to be, and that's kind of where we are. I don't like part time in this business. I just don't think it really belongs. And to be quite honest with you, and I hear a lot of these young kids, people, we get resumes. We get resumes, we get letters, we get emails, we get inboxes. You know, everybody sees Ramsey down rat around the world and hunting, and I wish that was my life. Could I do that? Don't get me wrong, but there's so much more to it. I'm sitting in the third week with a house full of clients, hunting morning and evening. Only I'm not hunting in the evening, I'm hunting in the morning, parting ways coming back here, and then working, you know, the phones, working the emails, following up with clients. I've still got clients traveling a lot of different other places, and my wife is at home, take care of all the administrative, and so I'm communicating with her. It's just a virtual office, and that's a great thing about this day and age with technology is we work in a virtual office a lot, but it's just, it's great. But I have a lot of people, a lot of young people in high school or college or fresh out of college, you know, wanting to get into, quote, the industry. And when I think of, quote, the industry, unquote, I think of merchandise. You think of the $24 billion hunting and fishing industry, that's merchandise. I'm not in the industry. I don't sell merchandise, nor do I want to. And I love a lot of great products out there, and there really are some nice products out there, but I don't want to work in that business. That's just not for me. And we're providing a service to people and, you know, finding very good outfitted. Somebody tagged me in a thread the other day, and in the thread, somebody looked to go somewhere, something. Somebody tagged me in a thread, and a real notorious outfitter. I have zero respect for the man at all, just to pass dealings. I know him to be just a very scurrilous personality, and but he probably Ramsey's not a guy. And no, ladies and gentlemen, I am not a guy. Do I want to be in that part of the world? But, you know, for nearly a decade, I had been traveling 100, now 200 days a year, meeting with outfitters, firsthand personal knowledge, and bringing into my assessment of a given hunt a lot of perspective from having been in a lot of other good and bad operations. And, you know, as somebody, a real duck hunter myself, I still truly really duck hunt. And my own home base is not the best, easiest duck hunting on earth. You have to work hard. You have to honor the sport. You have to call and hide and play your cards right and, you know, earn those ducks. I feel like I'm a real duck hunter. And as a real duck hunter that has taught for nearly two decades, two duck hunters of all walks of life, coast to coast, north to south, all walks of life, and to outfitters every single day, every day, without fail, talking to them before they go, talking to them while they're there, talking to them when they get back. You know, I think I've found a good way to really assess what is a good hunt, what constitutes a good hunt, and what duck hunters want. And so, you know, I'm in a service business, and we get these emails, and we get stuff, you know, about, I want to be in the business. Yeah, Rocky, I've had people just send me the resumes, and it means nothing to me because, you know, maybe one day my wife and I will take up some other people in our business, but probably not. You know, the nature of our business is very, very personal. It's relational with people. And if you're a clerk, if you do bookkeeping and kind of stuff that I've been able to do, if you sit behind a desk and do bookkeeping and talking on the phone about, you know, non-hunt related things, okay, I might can hire you. But you know what? For somebody to come out of college that lacks, it doesn't matter how long you've hunted with your dad, your friends, your family around Mississippi or your home base, but, you know, it would bring no value at all to me, and especially to my clients. You know, it would be 20 years before you had scrambled around the world and seen the good, the bad, the ugly, and been able to talk honestly to, you know, customers that are calling and asking questions. You know, like, I'm going to point out again, I know I've talked about this in the past, there's a huge distinction between what I do and what a guy in the outfitter does. Just, you know, if you're in sales and you're, you know, we all that work, all of us are having to go out every day and hunt and kill so that we can eat. You know, that's just the nature of the world. But you got to understand, when you call an outfitter, some have way more scruples than others. But when you talk to an outfitter, ABC Outfitting, and you know, wherever, he only, he is biased. He only kills something to eat when you buy the hunt from him, not from somebody else for something similar. You know, only him. And, you know, I see it time and time again in the hunting world of commercial hunting. You got to figure, Rocky, it's unregulated. It's unregulated in terms of professional ethics or boards or conventions or titles or requirements. I mean, it's just, hey, I'm a guide.
I always go back to
having your class.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I always go back to one of your very first podcasts that you were on with Jake and I, or Josh and I. It was one of us, but I always go back to one of those first podcasts. When somebody asked me that question, I asked them, have you ever worked in a restaurant? That just may go way over your head. But working in a restaurant and being a server / waitress, whatever you want, politically correct term these days, if you've never done that, I can tell you, it prepares you to be a guide.
Yeah, because You're exactly right.
Do you think being a guide is about killing ducks? Yeah, it's part of it, but the major part of it is about relationships. It is about people. You've got to love people to be a guide. And I've gotten feedback from that podcast already today about people's, well, why didn't you talk about yourself being in, you know, being in the hunt, quote unquote, hunting industry? I kind of look at it the same way Ramsey does. I look at it as merchandise when we were kind of talking about that. But being a guide, man, you better love people. That's what it's about. You better love talking to people. You better be waiting on them hand and foot.
That's correct. And if, you know, you've got to make a living, it's got to be honest. The distinction between us and them is you if you're a guide running your business, you have to sell that hunt. You know, we got mountains. We got ducks. You want timber? We got timber. I mean, you know, I see it all the time. And boy, you got to Latin America, it really takes on a life of its own on you know, sell at all costs. And the distinction between me and that is pick a geography. Let's say Mexico. Let's say Argentina. Mississippi or anywhere on our U.S. hunt list type stuff. We pick and choose. And, you know, and when we get into areas like Argentina and Mexico, you know, on the one hand, I've got an important relationship with my outfitters. Very important relationship. You know, Rocky, we're at a point now you can't buy. The guy off the street can't buy a hunt direct with a lot of our outfitters because we do such a great service for them. We market and we handle all the client needs coming to it and everything else. And it's unavailable directly. I've got it's a very good and a very valuable and a very important relationship with the Mexican outfit I'm here with right now. And it does bug them just a little. You can tell, you know, that I also have other outfitters. You know, take Mexico, for example. I've got Obregon, great combo hunt. I've got Model Line, wonderful couples trip. They're very, very different. They attract very different people, slightly different price points, different pluses and minuses. And so, you know, when someone calls me, heck yeah, I want to sell you a hunt. Don't call me if you don't want to buy one. But at the same time, you call me up, I want to go to this place right here. I want this, and this. And I listen. I realize, you know what? That's really not where you want to go. I know you think you do, but that's not where you want to go because they don't have this. And they can't do this, that, and this. You want to go here. So, you know, and I got told this morning, we get about an hour and a half drive out to the bay. I get to visit, you know, clients in the suburban, and we all just powwow and talk and everything else. I got told today, you know, a couple of people, they said, you know, Randy, one thing we like about your business, and, you know, they've been on some good hunts and bad hunts around the United States. They were talking about. They said, you know, you're big on expectations. You define reasonable expectations better than anybody else, which is. Had a lot to do with not being disappointed. And so, Rock, I'll tell you this. I've said this to a lot of different people. If you're a young person and you want to be in, quote, the industry, like you perceive the industry being watching television and playing on the internet, these influencers and personalities, if you think that for you, ask yourself why. You're by yourself and you're being introspective. Ask yourself why. What do you want to do in the industry? What is attracting you to it? You know, and if what your skill set and what your interest is has something to do with the actual delivery of what your functions would be in that position, do it. If you can go hunt fish, you know, you might think about another career. A lot of guys and that I do associate with do a lot of hunting and fishing, but their skill set is something entirely different, and it's important if you're going to rise and achieve. You know, my friend Ryan Bassham, for example, hunts and fishes quite a bit. Man, I think I'd have ulcers doing what he does. He operates at a high level of corporate America type sales and organization and development and things of that nature. And you know, he essentially prepared for all through college, all throughout a lot of his other travels and things he did. And he was building up into it. You know, it's like for what, I ain't putting words in Ryan's mouth, but from outside of looking in and knowing him, you know, he was working in the running shoe type market one time. And the mechanics of what he did, the whole accounting and managing and golly, all the stuff he had to do at the fundamental level is exactly what he's doing now. He's able to build on that in the outdoor world. And man, that life's not for everybody. You know, and my life is not for everybody, Rocky. My life is not for everybody. I mean, you know, you just think about being away 100, 200 days a year. And it doesn't matter what you're doing. That's a long time to be away from your home. And some people can do it, and some relationships can stand it, and some can't. You know, outdoor cameraman life, I've known over the years a lot of those types of people. And man, it's tough. That, you know,
Ramsey, do you remember the days when everybody was when TV was a huge thing, and man, everybody was just fighting to get in front of a camera?
Oh yeah.
If that everybody is what's driving you, I'm telling you, you're in it for the wrong reason.
That's exactly right. Well, think about it, Rocky. Look at social media. I think there is a little bit of insta fame, ego, something or another that compels people to want to be that guy. You know what I'm saying? And a lot of people are shocked. I talk a lot. I know that. I talk for a living. I'm real practice. I get that. But Rocky, I'm kind of a shy guy. I really, truly am. I don't make small talk well. I don't like small talk. What's the point? And I could just seem to be quiet. When Jake and I were doing our little video thing, I said, Jake, you know, I don't want to be a celebrity. I don't want to be in front of the camera. I just want to tell this story. You know, follow me. We're going to tell the story, but that's not why. I describe myself more as Jacques Cousteau. And everybody knows who Jacques Cousteau was. He's all over TV and stuff like that, but he wasn't a celebrity. He wasn't. He was a biologist. He was a marine biologist. And that's what he'll be remembered for, was a very famous marine biologist. Everybody can picture him. Everybody knows who he is, at least he's my age and older. But you know, he wasn't a celebrity. And that's, you know, you really need to look at, you know, by all means, if you can find a job, it's good to do. It ain't work if you like what you're doing. But you may find out that being in the outdoor industry is not what it seems to be. It's just another job.
Hey,
you're either good at it or you ain't.
Before we leave this topic and jump, I want to jump into Mexico just a little bit before we get off here. But you know the thing that I've noticed about people that are really successful in the hunting world, and I wouldn't say this. I would say this even if you weren't here. It's people like you and Ryan. Troy Ruiz is another great example of that. To make it and make it to the top of the game, I want to describe the personality of the guy that makes it to the top. And I'm going to use you, Ryan, and Troy as an example. Very detailed, very detail-oriented. You get tasks accomplished and get them accomplished well. Like I was walking around with Ryan at the NWTF. Dude, that guy is a people person all the way around. Usually don't find a detailed person and a great conversation maker. They don't usually come together. And I see that like in you and Troy. Y'all are people love you. But
you know, and you're always raring to go. Dude, working on no sleep.
Yeah.
You can't be on one. What I'm trying to say is you can't be on one end of the spectrum or the other. Usually the most successful people have traits from, they pull from both baskets, and they do them really well.
Yep. Thank you. That I agree. You know, I agree. A lot of the people you have on your podcast fall into that category. You know, the go-getters, the people, they got a vision, they got a dream, and they're not scared of hard work, they're not scared of all-nighters, and they're committed to delivery of products or services, and you know, that's just a common trait. But to me, get back on your question about these young people want a job in the industry. It doesn't matter if the product you're selling is plumbing supplies or hardware supplies or firearm products or camo apparel. It doesn't matter. It's all the same. At the end of the day, the job is a job. And whether you're in product distribution, the product manufacturing, the product sales, it's the same thing. It's just a different product. And you know, that's what I think you need to not lose sight of. Really and truly, my job, I'm marketing and selling and building brands, and it really doesn't matter that it's duck hunts or automobiles or dog training services or whatever. It's all the same. It's a job. And you've got to take it seriously or you're not going to be taken seriously. You know, and then that's just it in a nutshell. I know exactly where this is going about the, you know, you go to NWTF, there's a whole lot of Instagram Warner Bears walking around that show. Am I right?
Well,
a lot of them.
You know, one of the things that I know we've talked about this a million times. All people see are the pictures and the video and hear you on a podcast, talk about this and that. But we've covered it so many times. Let me just let you into open the door just a little bit to Ramsey's world. One of the main reasons Ramsey is the success that he is, I'm looking at it from an internet marketing perspective. This guy's good. Good Lord. Do you know what the detail that he goes into to build these pages out for his website, for SEO purposes, to be at the top of the game? It's unreal to me what Ramsey Russell from Brandon, Mississippi knows. And when we're offline, just talking, it's unbelievable the knowledge that you have in your head. And you're doing a lot of this by yourself. You and Miss Anita. That's the stuff that you never see or ever hear about, but it takes a ton of time.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a never ending treadmill. It just never ends.
It's not.
I'll
end with this. If you think it's going to be a 5 a.m. to a 6 p.m. job and be at the top, you may want to keep that plumbing job.
You, Rocky, I remember, you know, I'm going to tell you, as a business owner and somebody that works, you know, gosh, I'm thinking of any of your podcasters, any of your podcast guests. Man, I think back to those days, I was working 40 or 50 hours with the federal government, you know, and what a grind that was. And now I look back at it and go, yeah, that was in part-time days. Yeah, those were good old days when I just worked part-time. You know, and you know, if you're in the business, you're doing what I do, Instagram and social media. You know, sales, and again, it doesn't matter if it's plumbing or fitness gear or whatever it is. You know, you create sizzle. You know, if you want to sell hamburgers, park your grill upwind and light it off and throw them patties on. People are gonna come flocking to buy hamburgers. And you know, and that's what a lot of social media is. It's just put a lot of hamburger smoke down on the crowd, you know, and that's why it looks like that's all we do. But there's a lot that goes into even being here with these hosted hunts. You know, you've got a lot of folks. I've got 12 people in the house, including myself. And you know, every night we meet and we sort who's going where. And, you know, trying to get the guys that, for whatever reason, didn't shoot as good today into a better opportunity tomorrow. And you know, matching personalities. And, gosh, Rocky, you know, you just see it all in hunting camp. You know, guys that are just happy no matter what, and guys that are unhappy no matter what. So you just got to manage people. And I still say, man, going back to those days when I bus tables at Shoney's, that was very, very eye-opening. Experience. It was a real learning curve just on dealing with people, you know, and it's just, you know, you got to have life is interpersonal. You've got to have relationships and enough to, you can't just judge a guy at his camp just because you talk at dinner for 2 minutes. You got to kind of get to know him and so that you can deliver a better service. And when people call, first timers get an email, get a telephone call. You know, you got to spend time with them. And I can talk your head off telling you about these hunts. But at the same time, I can listen. And it's very important when you're telling me why you want to go on this hunt that I listen. But because you know, what you want out of a Mexico duck hunt and what he wants out of a Mexico duck hunt and what he wants out of a Mexico duck hunt can be entirely different things. Possible all at the same place, but entirely different things. You know, we don't just send checks to outfitters and a list of names. We've got a little sheet, a little spreadsheet that we print off and make a very nice client form, we call it, that we send the outfitters about private room needs, mobility limitations, just all kinds of little boats that we know are important that the outfitter know that when this person shows up. Dietary restrictions. Golly, we had a guy here a couple of weeks ago got bit by a tick or something. He can't eat any mammal meat. That's kind of important to know that this guy can't eat animal flesh. He birds, no problem. Animals, problem. And you know, you just need to know that and be able to communicate it. So, you know, it's a job like any other. But I really do like what I do. Somebody asked me last night what I liked about it, you know, other than hunting fish, of course. But you know, my personality is such, maybe a little bit of ADD, you know, the web page, the sales, the this, the that, the putting out fires, the travel. It's like I'm always shifting gears. I'm always doing something else. I've got 50 irons in the fire. And I'm a guy that likes to put my hand on different ones. I get bored holding the same irons. I like to move around and do different things. And so it's always, I'm always engaged in doing that kind of stuff. And, you know, last little quip about, you know, young people wanting to get into business. I've been asked that in, you know, public presentations and things like that before. How do I do what you do? And my advice to a young man, or his age, or younger, would be, go to Mexico, build a business, become very successful, and create a lot of disposable income, and then call people like me to do the non-sexy stuff, and you just go have all the fun. That'd be my advice. Somebody wanted to travel like Randy is hire Randy and need to take care of all the busy work, and you get to go to camp and be the guest. That's what you want to be. You want to be the guest. You know, a lot of people, I think, a lot of young people that want to be in the industry, what they really want to do is be the guy on the camera drawing back a boat. And we're going, oh, yeah, okay. That's what they really want to do. They don't think about what that guy is doing the other 360 days a year in a middle management type position that could be pick a business, any product. It could be anything. It could be restaurant equipment. It doesn't have to be hunting equipment. It could be restaurant equipment. That's what That's just life. You got to work. And so, you know, I'd say really examine what it is, what's leading you into that, what wanting to do that, and be good at it. But, you know, that's just my thoughts on it.
All right, let's discuss Mexico just a minute. Man, I thought the best picture that came out of Mexico the past few days is the Teal Trio. You know that Cinnamon Teal is on my hit list.
No,
man, good. I mean, y'all had a green wing, a blue wing, and a Cinnamon Teal in a picture.
Yeah, we did. Rocky, that's, you know, I went to Matalan. Home for a few days down to Obregon, and let's just say the last month, I've not seen the preponderance of cinnamon teal, maybe ever, that I've seen this year. I'm seeing them nearly everywhere, and shooting quite a few of them, and it's just they're everywhere. Green wing, blue wing, cinnamon. Golly, every area we've hunted down here, they got to understand, Rocky, this outfitter. We may get up and drive 2 hours to get to a bay from where I'm sitting right now. And so just figure he got a geographical area about an hour drive wide, 2 or 3 hours long. And that's a big geography of potholes, estuaries, and bays, and creeks, and rivers, and streams all throughout Mexico, agriculture land, whatever, you know. But all the areas we've hunted this year, we've been shooting cinnamons. I've never seen as many cinnamons. And my favorite thing about hunting down here in Obregon are the Mexican ducks, which is a part of the whole mallard complex. One biologist was telling me they're closely related to a mottled duck and to a mallard, but they're still part of the mallard complex. And they quack. They decoy. They're non-migratory primarily. Greatest density is right here in the Yaqui Valley. To me, I think they represent one of the greatest, most underexploited mallard light resources in the North American continent. And the Mexican biologist, because to operate under an UMA in Mexico, you have to pay a Mexican biologist, a government biologist, to fill out your paperwork and make biological recommendations in terms of limits and things of that nature. And he said the other day while we were fishing, he said that for whatever reason, Mexican ducks had the greatest population explosion, the most breeding they've ever had in 15 years. And I've seen that too. Man, I mean, these things are everywhere. And we have called them in with mallard calls, and they act like you want mallard to act. You quack to them. And they don't take all the nonsense and finishing that we put into mallards or right or wrong. I mean, really and truly, what I've learned in the last 7 or 8 years is call to them. And when they turn, shut up. Now, they might try to bend a little bit. You need to quack to them one more time, but let them just come over. Let them come in. And they don't like a lot of chattering and feet chuckling. And don't do none of that. They're allowed to slip away from you if you do all that mess. Just quack them, let them know you're there, and then be still. And ask, boy, it's been fun. But yeah, we've been shooting. Number one thing people go home with down here is the Teal Trio. Green wings, blue wings, and cinnamons. And Matt Pitt, of course, golly, and with all the birds he's hauled over his career, you know, had on his table over the countless years he's done taxidermy, he pointed out to me one time how and why green wings are so much better looking at times down here than what we'll see back home. And you see that in a lot of the birds. You know, they start to color up on the wintering ground, like, say, in Mississippi in December, January. But, you know, they're still molting. They're still growing feathers. And by the time you put your hands on them down here in late February, Rocky, they are spectacular. The adult birds are nothing short of just spectacular. And I brought my old yellow dog out here, Coop the Chicken Dog. She'd been down here every year of her life. And I never get walking through the airport, man. I'm just a poor old dog. She's old. She's got arthritis, you know. And this is her last big trip, farewell, da-da-da. And I leave a dog crate down here, and I just walk her through the airport on a leash and just lay down the plane, all that good stuff. She's a very, very nice disposition for that kind of travel. And she just acts like an old dog, you know, and loaded up and back to the truck the first morning. And we got to where we were going. And, gosh, she'd probably been there a dozen times. And when I dropped the tailgate and let her out, she hit the ground like a spring chicken and hadn't let up since. I mean, that dog was in her element. And she had a dog, duck fetching pole down here. Now, let me tell you, I was like, golly, she lost 5 years just coming down here. She's a young dog again. Not really, because she gets tired. And she's an old dog, but she gets tired, sleeps good, and everything else. But it's been just a joy to have her down here and get, you know, she's picking up birds and hunting hard. We're just having a good time, Rocky. And I'm going to say this.
Hey, hold on.
Go ahead.
If you haven't heard the story of Coop the chicken dog, go back and find it. It's in the older podcast where Ramsey tells the story about.
I tell it pretty often. I had some practice telling story. I tell a lot about my chicken dog. People say, man, you know, I like your dog, whatever. I say, oh, man, she's just a $250 chicken dog. And I could tell that story in the blind or something. But you know, you can shoot cinnamon teal in places. And, you know, I know they're shot on the Salt Lakes up in Utah. I know they're shot in parts of California. I'm sure every now and again in Arizona, probably in New Mexico, if there's any hunt there. I hear once in a blue moon somebody getting them in Texas, parts of Texas. But at the end of the day, if cinnamon teal are your thing, Mexico. Mexico's place to shoot cinnamon teal. Mazatlan, 99% of the time, and Obregon. I've never had a client leave this operation without a cinnamon teal, ever. And sometimes they're just a dime a dozen. I've shot dozens of them in the last few weeks. And with the clients, and camp-wide, we shot many dozens of them, lots and lots of them. And so, you know, Mexico is the place to go to get your cinnamon teal. And, you know, a lot of shovelers get taken home, too, because they're pretty good-looking birds here.
So is tomorrow the chicken dog's last hunt for real, ever?
It's her last trip. It's her last day in Mexico, and when she goes back home, she'll get to be a house potato sort in the backyard. I'm sure I'll take her out some. I'm sure I'll take her out some to hunt, but not much. Now I've got that little black lab with Char. And she's at the trainer up in Indiana right now. And fingers crossed, hopefully, you know, by next fall, she's gonna be a force of nature to be reckoned with. And it'll be time to let her tote. I mean, you know, she's just a, you know, she's a ball of fire. And so, yeah, she'll be my full-time retriever if everything goes right next year. And Coop will just be a couch potato, a sofa turtle, I call him. You know, lay on an old sofa and stretch out like a turtle on a log, you know. And she's 9 years old, and you know,
you
some
got
dogs
to
last
do
longer than others, you know.
Ramsey,
but,
you know, you got to do that story.
Which story is that?
On her. You got to do that story in the Get Duck Story webisode.
Yeah, I will. I may have better dogs than Cooper was, but I'll never have a sweeter dog. Her disposition is the sweetest personality I've ever seen. And look, she's got some bad habits too, son. Don't get me lying, she's a lab, but she's a good dog. And since I had her, I never had a dog that would root a duck out of cover like she would. She'll just stick with it. And back when she was younger, you know, send her off into a wheat field, get a Mexican mallard or into a thicket to get something, there wasn't no calling her back. I mean, you just weren't going to call it, especially if she had a nose full of it. You might not think she did. One time, one of my favorite memories of her down in Mexico, we had shot some ducks in a canal, and she went and picked up some and came back, and I'm trying to call her. We continue on, and she wouldn't come out of there, and just would not come out. Two or three of us had shot. We thought we had a bird marked down, and she would not come out of there. And I was getting angry, trying to call her, and about that time, I'm talking 5 minutes into it, a freaking Mexican duck, she had finally rooted it out. And it kind of flew down the bank about 10 yards and jumped back into my other cover, and I just sat down. I said, y'all might as well have a seat. We're not going nowhere to dog find that duck. She ain't coming back. And I ain't going to get her. You know, just like when a lion dog trees a lion. Ain't one way that story's going to end. That's with a dead lion. You don't let a dog tree a coon or tree something without honoring it, you know. She wasn't going to come out with that. It's one of my favorite. Took her probably about 15, 20 minutes. That bird had one little BB, and one on the very, very distal joint of his wing, had one little BB break on it. Probably would have healed up and lived. But she wasn't going to come out of that creek without that duck. And that's just, she's always been that way. But then if you get her on the plane, like she just lays down and disappears. Even when meal service comes through, she just disappears. People sitting next to me don't even realize she's laying there. She's quiet. She's stable. I literally have my leash is just like a slip. It's just, you know, you make a little noose on the end. And I put it over. She doesn't wear a collar. I just lay this little leash on her, and man, she doesn't pull on you, she doesn't tug on you. With just a subtle pressure left and right, she'll steer. She's a real, real well-behaved and mellow dog like that. Until the gun goes off, and then she's a hunting dog. And even at 9 years old, she was hard charging and hard at it this last couple of weeks. I'm proud of her. This is her last big trip. You know, it's just time. I've had just maybe bad luck with dogs. I've had dogs literally 13 years old, but they're really good hunting performance. Starts to fade somewhere around 9 and 10 years old. And it's just, you know, I've had some dogs that'll go much harder, much longer, but at the same time, they suffer that for it. You know, the arthritis, the joints, I don't want to do that to her. She's been a good dog and one of my favorite dogs ever. And I'm just going to let her retire and be my buddy and sleep on a couch sofa somewhere.
Yeah, that would... She's been such a big part of your business for so long. What a great story. What a great story. And it connects with so many people.
I've said this before. She's a band magnet. She's a band magnet. She has brought in more bands than any dog I've ever met. And the brand migration has been weak last 3 years. But it sure would be a nice ending for her to bring in some brand bands tomorrow. So my fingers crossed and I hope it happens.
That would be awesome.
That's all the time I got today. Rocky, I enjoyed it. It's good to be back on the show with you.
Oh, man, I really enjoyed it. I'm glad we closed it out talking about Cooper. That is awesome. Last trip. Ramsey, be careful on your way back home. You'll be on U.S. soil Friday night, right? Sometime Friday night.
Friday night, 10:30.
All right, brother. We'll have fun in the morning. Thank you again. We want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.